Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, where we bring you all the news from Washington, D.C., that the government does not want you to know. Now, in Washington, of course, everyone is talking this week about the death of our 40th president, Ronald Reagan. And, of course, there's still a lot to talk about. I devoted my entire show, most of my entire show, I did a little bit commemorating the D-Day invasion, the 60th anniversary. But I devoted most of the show last night to the mixed legacy of Ronald Reagan because I think it's important that folks understand not just the good that he did, and there was some good, but also the bad. People never talk about the dark underside of Ronald Reagan and what is his mixed legacy. So I want to replay a lot of what I had to say last night for you and get your opinion. Now, one reason I'm doing this also is because Radio Power listeners were unable to hear last night. The Radio Power server was down. And perhaps it's a good time to note that it's your donations that keep Radio Power up. RadioPower.org, of course, is a progressive radio site that has my show, Tom Hartman's, Tony Tribbiano, a lot of good progressive radio, but it survives entirely by your donations. And the more you can donate, the less likely it is to be down, as it was last night. But it was down last night, and so the only people that could hear my show were those listening on the radio in metropolitan Washington, D.C., on AM 1200, or those that were listening on my website at www.radioinsidescoop.com, where you can always catch my live show and archived in case the Radio Power site is down. But I really like my Radio Power listeners. They're all over the world, and you really bring some good insight into this question. So I want to replay a lot of what I had to say yesterday, understanding, of course, that I'm still here, the show is still live, and if you want to call in at 877-57-SCOOP, your voice will be heard. That being said, let's talk about Ronald Reagan. Yesterday, the 40th president of the United States, Ronald Wilson Reagan, died at age 93 of complications out of Alzheimer's disease. His legacy is mixed. He is the patron saint of conservatives, often called, certainly someone who fought hard against communism wherever he saw it, whether in the Soviet Union or in places where it was less clear, Latin America and Africa. He very much changed the at least the rhetoric of big government, trying to cut down on government, and ended up cutting taxes without cutting spending. He's someone who, I think now that, now that he's gone, we're going to see a whole week of special mourning here in Washington, D.C., special events to him, and I think he'll be praised. And some of that's good. Some of that's good. I think his legacy is mixed. I think there is I think when a man dies, when a famous person dies, and they're not clearly an evil person, I think the tendency is to talk only about the good. And that's understandable. But when it comes to a president of the United States, I think it's important to discuss the full legacy of Ronald Reagan, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I want to devote this hour to doing that and also to taking your calls about that. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. If you're listening locally, it is 703-777-1200, or you can send an email to comment@radioinsidescoop.com. And we'll get to the legacy of Ronald Reagan and that entire discussion, which I'm going to have most of this hour. Before we get there, though, I can't help but note that today is the 60th anniversary of D-Day. 60 years ago, on June 6, 1944, an event happened whose legacy, I think, is not mixed. I don't think there's anyone that can argue that it was something that was incredible, terrifying, and all to the good. On that day, American, Canadian, British troops stormed the beaches of Normandy, France, climbed up those cliffs under withering machine gun fire, and managed to begin to take Europe back for freedom. And as I said, that legacy is not mixed, and I think it's very important that we remember it 60 years ago today, that the important discussion that we're going to have today and all this week about Ronald Reagan not overshadow the true greatness of what happened 60 years ago. You know, I've been to Normandy. I've scaled the cliffs, in fact. They weren't easy to scale. They're about 10 stories high or so. I tried one, didn't get a good handhold, and then tried it a second place, actually. It took me a good 30 minutes of tough climbing to get up there. I, of course, had no gun.
I had no pack on my back, and most importantly, I didn't have torrents of machine gun fire coming down at me. Having seen the cliffs, I can't help but even more be amazed at the bravery, the courage of those men, Canadian, American, and British, 60 years ago. You know, I think for those of us who weren't around in that time, Steven Spielberg's movie Saving Private Ryan still is the movie to see. To imagine D-Day, the first half hour of that movie, is spellbinding, it's scary, it's terrifying. And indeed, it must have been a terrifying thing. Of the thousands and thousands and thousands that embarked, very few lived to see the end of June 6, 1944. And I've gone up there, as I said, I scaled the cliffs, and you could see the old German embankments. And they weren't standing on top of the cliff shooting down at people. No, no, no. They were in these metal, sort of steel, contained places with a very small hole where the machine gun went out, where they could shoot at the Allied troops like ants. And it must have been virtually impossible to climb up those cliffs with a gun on your back, get to the top, not be shot at by the machine gun fire, and manage to take over those places. So I just want, before we go on about Ronald Reagan, just to talk, just to praise the men of 60 years ago, and they were all men, though there were certainly women helping them later on and before. Just to praise their bravery for doing that. You know, sometimes I guess it's rare to have a clear war. A war where the aim is true, where the goals are clear, where the cause is just. I am not a pacifist. There is definitely a time for war. That was a time for war, and we honor them. And in fact, just Monday, Memorial Day, I was at the new memorial to the World War II vets here in Washington, D.C., and talking with some of the vets, honoring them for their service. In fact, I was there, and I saw an 8-year-old girl. I assume she was 8. I don't know her age. She was a little girl. And she was reading very slowly, sounding out the words, something around one of the bases of the monuments, where it said that it was a call to end, as she put it, tyranny. She read the word T-Y-R-A-N-N-Y. She said tyranny, and I gently corrected her and said tyranny. She should know how to pronounce the word. And her father smiled, and she smiled and repeated, tyranny. I guess the only reason I'm bringing that up is because yesterday I heard another someone with the mental age of a 10-year-old going through reading a prepared speech where he also talked about how Ronald Reagan helped to end tyranny. That mental 10-year-old, of course, was our president, George W. Bush. And when he said tyranny, I practically threw something at my television set. Tyranny! Tyranny! Come on, George! Ah, why is he our president? Ronald Reagan would not have made that mistake. Ronald Reagan was known as the great communicator. He was someone who would not have flubbed his lines. He would have read them with power. And indeed, he was known not just for reading a prepared script with power, but also for his easy quips. He was someone whose quips could very much put people at ease and in many ways hid the radical nature of some of his policies. There are a number of quotes that he gave that we still remember to this day. One of the most important being when he asked the voters in his debate with Jimmy Carter, "Are you better off than you were 4 years ago?" Still, I think the question that virtually everyone should ask when approaching the re-election of an incumbent president. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Those are Reagan's words. The people looked at Jimmy Carter, resoundingly said no. And I would hope that John Kerry would continue to use Reagan's words, because I think that with the current president, again, are we better off than we were 4 years ago? I think the answer is clear. Listen, if you want to comment on Ronald Reagan, his legacy, please call in. Let's not make this a monologue. Let's have a discussion here. The number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-577-2667, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. I want to talk about the full legacy of Ronald Reagan. As I said, part of it was his optimism. He was clearly a dreamer. He was someone who believed that entire things could be changed. And in some ways, this was very good. I think that he profoundly saw that communism was evil. You know, it's interesting. Ronald Reagan began as a Democrat, and when he switched parties to the Republican Party, a lot of Democrats followed him. They called them Reagan Democrats. He was an actor, of course. In fact, Ronald Reagan began his career in radio. I don't know if you know that, but hey, you know, if radio can do it for Ronald Reagan, hey, maybe I have a chance. I don't know. But began his career in radio, moved on to Hollywood. We all know he was an actor. He was six-time president of the Screen Actors Guild. So this is a person who, at least originally, had some understanding of the need for labor organizations. How ironic that one of the first things he did as president was fire all the air traffic controllers during a strike. But while he was president of the Screen Actors Guild, he saw that there were communists, Soviet-inspired communists, trying very much to take over labor organizations. That's a fact. I think we liberals, you know, need to remember where those things happened. We need to understand that. I think that largely propelled him to switch parties. He was also, you may or may not know, an FBI informant during that time, saying sort of who joined the Communist Party at the time, though he was not at all as bad as say, Joe McCarthy or all of them. But what he did do is he very much transformed the Republican Party. The Republican Party was already changing. In fact, I would argue that Joe McCarthy is one of the earliest to help change the Republican Party. McCarthy, Nixon, George Wallace were all focusing on two things. One was making the Republican Party more anti-communist. Of course, McCarthy went after a lot of innocent people. So did Nixon, by the way. And George Wallace, who back when the Democrats changed from the Party of the South to the Party of Civil Rights, the party, really this is John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson's doing, changing from a party that really represented the Old South. Remember, the Republican Party used to be the party of Lincoln. It used to be the party that fought to end the slaves. Then it married big business around the turn of the century. And by the 50s, really was fighting between its moderate and conservative wings. Eisenhower was more moderate. And people like Joe McCarthy, where you could call conservative, or Robert Taft. And they were the ones who were mostly focusing on anti-communism and also focusing on retreating on civil rights, on fighting back against civil rights, against the 60s. Bill Clinton has said that if you think the 60s, for all its problems, was mostly a good thing, you're probably a Democrat today. And if you think the 60s, for all its successes, was mostly a bad thing, you're probably a Republican today. And Ronald Reagan, what he did is he took the angry whites of George Wallace, and he took the anti-communists of Nixon and Joe McCarthy, and he melded them together, but he did something much more. He put a positive face on it. You know, from the paranoid Joe McCarthy to the dour and criminal Richard Nixon to the angry George Wallace, Ronald Reagan was none of that. None of that in personality. He was always smiling. He was optimistic. He was cracking jokes. He was a guy that people could relate to. And his demeanor really did amazing things. His optimism did amazing things. You know, I was just a little kid when Ronald Reagan came to power. I don't remember a lot of it. But I do remember the optimism of the time. I do remember Carter was all dour and sad, and Reagan was optimistic. Morning in America, he would say. And I think that optimism largely propelled him to power. In fact, it strikes me in terms of the legacy of Ronald Reagan and lessons to be learned from Ronald Reagan that one of them is the power of optimism. And I hope that John Kerry learns from that and becomes a very optimistic candidate. George Bush could be nothing if not pessimistic. I mean, between economy where with some recent improvement, still he's lost more jobs than any president since Herbert Hoover. No other president, in fact, has lost jobs in the 20th century except Bush and Herbert Hoover. And then, of course, this war, this never-ending war against terrorism. I would hope Kerry can bring back the optimism. And in some sense, he is. He's talking about let America be America again. Bill Clinton also very much used this optimism. Frankly, it's older than Reagan, FDR. Remember, happy days are here again. And then Bill Clinton, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. Well, Ronald Reagan gave that optimism to the conservatives. And it has a lot of power. It has a lot of power. So I want to talk this hour about Ronald Reagan. I want to talk about his personality, the fact that he, you know, was he'd like to tell jokes, he's a great communicator. I want to talk about his foreign policy, both what succeeded, against the Soviet Union. What didn't succeed, a lot of the problems in Iran and Iraq we have today can be traced back to Ronald Reagan and so forth. In Latin America and Africa and Grenada, he was seeing communism under every rock. Did he go too far? I also want to talk domestically. I mean, he's the president who really began making the Republicans the tax-cutting party. And also not cutting spending. So he's the first Republican that made deficits okay. Before Ronald Reagan, remember, Republicans hated deficits. They believed in balanced budgets. They used to be fiscal conservatives. Fiscal conservatism means you used to be a conservative. You used to care about overspending. In fact, they viciously attacked Jimmy Carter for trying to get out of the you know, we had the two oil shocks. The first time that OPEC really came after us was in 74. The second time, 79, 80, our economy was reeling. Carter was still dealing with the Vietnam War and the fact that Lyndon Johnson was going to war and not paying for tax, had not taxed to pay for it, and this horrible economy, high unemployment, high inflation, Carter was dealing with it, and he went into debt some $50 billion at one point, and the Republicans went crazy. How dare he go into debt $50 billion? Well, Reagan put those deficits to shame, and of course, Bush put those even to shame. And Reagan also changed the idea of how we think about the poor, as people who sort of we need to help, to people who, well, there's the welfare queen. So there's so much to talk about. Again, 877-57-SCOOP, talk foreign, talk domestic. Am I being unfair? The guy's 93 years old. He had Alzheimer's. He died. Should I join in the praise? I do think I am praising him partly here. I there's a lot to praise about Ronald Reagan, but there also we need to remember both sides of his legacy. There's a lot to talk about, and I hope you'll join in. 877-57-SCOOP. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Hey, it's Armin. I'm calling from Sarasota.
Hi, Armin. How are you? What are your thoughts on Ronald Reagan?
Well, I have a question about his legacy, and then I have a question about Bush.
Okay.
Over the weekend.
Okay.
The only question I have left for Ronald Reagan's legacy is, how much extra room is in his coffin?
You mean to bury another president there?
No, I didn't say that.
Well, tell me what you mean, Armin.
No, you can draw your own conclusions, I guess, but I just was curious how much extra room is in his coffin.
Okay. I won't draw any conclusions. I'll just let you go on.
Okay. You can kind of leave it open-ended.
Fair enough. Tell me, what are
okay.
your...
Okay, and the question I have about Bush, you know... this is all over the media now about Reagan's legacy and all this crap.
Right.
But one mustn't forget the question I have. When he was over in France this past weekend, and licking Chirac's boots or shoes, whatever you want to call it, I just want to know if Chirac offered him any French fries or American fries when he was done.
Well, one of the things I found, Armin, by the way, I want to thank you for your call. I appreciate that. One of the things that I want to find out that I found interesting about Bush's visit in France is that they asked Bush about Reagan's legacy, and they asked him, if he considered himself a Ronald Reagan Republican. He said, no, I'm a George W. Bush Republican, which showed me really what kind of person he is. He's the kind of guy that wouldn't even give credit to Reagan for building up the conservative party. Now, I don't know whether it's his own arrogance or maybe it's just a moronic political statement, but it's really amazing to me that he wouldn't praise Ronald Reagan and instead call himself a George Bush Republican. But I think in some ways that George Bush is more radical than Ronald Reagan. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine.
Hi, this is Mike from L.A.
Hey, Mike from L.A. What are your views on Ronald Reagan?
Well, mixed. I'm a little older than you, so I was in college when he came into being. And I was struck by I remember his inauguration day with his wife in the regal red suit. And, I mean, he was very presidential from day one. And I think he brought a certain amount of grandeur and a certain amount of pomp and circumstance back to the White House that I think had been missing in previous years. And he restored a certain positive image that I think Americans, we like to think that we're not royalists, but I think that we like to see a little bit of that in our president.
You know, what's interesting to me is that I see some of that royalism both in Reagan and actually in Bush. I would call it King Ronald and Prince George. And the difference to me is this. Neither, both of them, to me,
and I, maybe I'm taking this to another tack, and I'll let you go back and finish, Mike. But to me, the royalism was the sense of these are presidents, both Reagan and George W. Bush, who didn't care about the details, didn't watch over the details, just sort of reigned over as a figurehead. But there was a difference between Reagan and Bush, and I'm talking about George W. Bush here. The difference was that Reagan, while he didn't sweat the details and frankly often got them wrong, he had these overwhelming values, this anti-communism and anti-government values. And whatever you thought about them, he was going to push those through no matter what. That's why sort of he's the king. He had these overwhelming ideas, but pushed it through. I think one difference is that George W. Bush, and what, maybe why I call him Prince George versus King Ron, is that he also doesn't so much sweat the details. But I don't see this vision that I saw from Ronald Reagan. But let me go back. What else do you think about Ronald
Reagan? No, I completely agree with you. I'm trying to look at the positive things about Reagan's legacy today. I certainly had some problems with him. I mean, every time I see a homeless schizophrenic wandering around on the street, I think about Ronald Reagan.
I'm going to get to that. It's a great point. Go ahead.
But he did. I mean, his great achievement, as far as I'm concerned, is that he ended the Cold War.
Right.
I really believe that he did. I mean, because it was that single-minded determination that you're talking about. And I think that the communist bloc looked at him. They saw, even though Star Wars wasn't going to work and it would never work, he had a single-minded determination to do it and to prevail. And I think that, quite frankly, communism, it was on his last legs anyway, but it did crumble in the face of his determination, and I have to give him that.
Yeah, no, I give him a lot of credit for that. I agree with you, Mike. I think that communism was falling apart, and it probably would have ended at some point anyway, but he definitely hastened the day. And I guess what I give Ronald Reagan credit for is recognizing, I mean, when he called the Soviet Union an evil empire, I remember Europeans at that time were sort of equating the United States and the Soviet Union. Oh, well, they're both bad. And they would mention many of the bad things we did. And we did lots of bad things, particularly before the 80s. You know, we did coups in Iran and Dominican Republic and Chile and a whole host of them. And so Europeans would say, well, we do coups. The Soviet Union does coups. We do. But I think Ronald Reagan recognized that as bad as, well, he didn't recognize the bad parts of American policy at all. But he did at least appropriately call the Soviet Union the evil empire. And people, I guess, they recoiled at that, and yet it was. I don't know what else you can call it. It was an evil empire. It promoted a lot of misery to a lot of people. It's a system that failed, and Ronald Reagan recognized that, and I want to give him his due. Hey, Mike, I want you to hang on the line. We got to go to a commercial break, but I want you to hang on the line, and we'll hear more from you right after the break. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Let me know your thoughts on Ronald Reagan and his legacy next. What did you think of him? 877-57-SCOOP or email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Back right after this.
J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first, can help you through those summertime fix-up projects like no other store in the area. J.T. Hurst can save you time and money. And if you're considering a new deck or other outdoor construction project, here's a great way to learn about Trex decking and railing. This Wednesday, June 9th, from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m., Plunkett and Webster and J.T. Hurst and Company will be sponsoring a deck and railing expo. Trex decking and railing, along with several other products, will be featured at J.T. Hurst, and you're invited to stop by, enjoy a cookout-style lunch, and you can also register to win several great prizes. When you're looking for lumber, hardware, and building materials, you can count on J.T. Hurst to provide the highest quality at highly competitive prices. We'll see you this Wednesday, June 9th, for the Trex Decking and Railing Expo from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. J.T. Hurst, where customer service comes first. On Catoctin Circle in Leesburg.
Here we are at the beginning of the 21st century, a time of rapid change in technology. At NOVEC, Northern Virginia Electric Cooperative, we spend a good part of our day using the latest technologies to provide our customers with the most reliable electric service possible. Simply put, when you hit the switch, the light comes on, the toaster toasts, the oven cooks, and the computer announces you've got mail. The rest of our day is spent using slightly older business methods. For more than 60 years, we've dedicated ourselves to making our communities better places to live and work, lending our time, resources, and support to organizations that make real differences in people's lives, embracing the future while holding on to our heritage. Some things are meant to change. Some things are not. We're Novec, locally based and member-owned. For a list of customer services, answers to your questions, and even employment opportunities, visit our website at www.novec.com. Novec. I got the power to move ya.
Welcome back to the Mark Levine's Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. We're talking about the legacy of Ronald Wilson Reagan, the 40th President of the United States, who died yesterday. I want to read some quotes by Ronald Reagan that virtually all of us that remember the 1980s will remember. He, as I said in the debate with Jimmy Carter, he asked American people, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? In his debate with Walter Mondale, he came up with the wonderful... Yes, the wonderful quip with Walter Mondale. He was asked about his age and whether it would be an issue in the campaign, and he said, I will not let my opponent's youth and inexperience become an issue in this campaign, a very clever way of defecting the age issue. In his debate with Jimmy Carter, he came up with the phrase, there you go again, a nice, gentle way of basically calling his opponent, wrong-headed. Even after he was shot, of course, in 1981 by... the insane shooter, John Hinckley, he joked in the hospital. He said, honey, to Nancy Reagan, I forgot to duck. He's also famous for saying, in terms of Jimmy Carter, he said, it's a recession when your neighbor loses your job, a depression when you lose your job, and recovery is when Jimmy Carter loses his job. Again, you can imagine how some of those things might be said today.
You know, I can imagine if George Bush if John Kerry were to say, I'm just going to quote Ronald Reagan, and recovery is when George Bush loses his job. And I think that that he can use a lot of that rhetoric, because what Ronald Reagan did was he hid his radical agenda behind his positive rhetoric. You know, even if it was, whether it was war in Nicaragua, whether it was, taking arms for hostages in Iran, whether it was cutting back on civil rights, you got to remember that Ronald Reagan, he appointed Robert Bork to the court. He was against the Voting Rights Act. He largely began the conservative agenda. The difference was, is he put this kind face on it. And so with all the media acclaim as to the kind face of Ronald Reagan, we have to remember that he was basically just a good politician, someone who was hiding. But I think the difference is that he believed his agenda. He really did believe it. He had this sort of dream idea that anyone could succeed in America. And to do that, he basically asked Americans to avert their eyes from the poor, to not look and see the systemic problems. It was Ronald Reagan's idea that the welfare queen, in fact, this idea that poor people were ripping off the country. And so a lot of middle-class people who had made it in life decided to turn around and to pick on the poor. And that was really a change from the Great Society and Lyndon Johnson and the idea that all Americans could succeed. And some of that legacy we still face today. Let me go to more calls. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. What's your first name? Where are you from?
Rex from Alabama.
Hey, Rex from Alabama. What were your thoughts on Ronald Reagan?
Well, he always struck me as a very nice, congenial sort of guy, but there were some odd things that kind of went on during his administration that I always wondered about. And the thing you never saw in the news back then very much was hardly anything at all about his vice president. It's very quiet times when it comes to George Bush, who, as you know, was the ex-head of the CIA.
Right.
And I couldn't help but believe, even back then, that a lot of the things that were going on at that time, Ronald Reagan wasn't calling the shots.
Interesting. Who do you think was? I mean, you think it was George Bush?
I think it was Bush? George Bush. I think a whole lot that went on during that administration was done by George Bush.
You know, my impression was that Ronald Reagan definitely wasn't a detail man. I mean, definitely not like George W. Bush. He wasn't into the details. But I guess I do think that the general principles were Reagan's. I mean, I think that he wanted to cut taxes. Even if they led to a huge deficit. I mean, he wanted to fight communism any way he could, and under every rock, not just the Soviet Union, but also Nicaragua. You've got to remember, he did not oppose apartheid in South Africa because he saw it as communism. But I don't know. It's an interesting theory. I don't know if George Bush, George H.W. Bush was clever enough to call those shots behind Ronald Reagan. You know, he also had some people like Rumsfeld and Alexander Haig and others in there that also could have been calling the shots. But it's an interesting point. I don't know. Do you have another point to make?
No, that was really it for today.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for calling in. I appreciate that. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your first name and where are you from? Caller, you there? I think I lost you. All right, let's go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine. What are your views on Ronald Reagan?
Hi, Mark. This is Kevin from Tampa, Florida.
Hey, Kevin from Tampa.
I agree somewhat with you, but I don't think you're going far enough, Mark.
Okay.
I happen to believe, with full evidence, that history, in the long run, say 50 years out, will really judge Ronald Reagan as one of our disasters as a president.
Okay.
And I really believe that because everything you're saying and what a couple of your callers said, and when you listen to these people calling up on C-SPAN and wherever else crying about it, they all say the same thing. They are praising his communication skills.
Right.
And the man was an actor.
Right.
He knew how to get up in front of a camera.
Right.
And to move a crowd. But he didn't know what he was doing.
Would you say that domestically and foreign policy?
Well, when I say he doesn't know what he's doing, he knew what he was doing. In the sense that it was what he wanted to do, but the problems we have now, almost every single one of them are directly attributable to him.
Well, a lot of that's true.
He started the busting of the unions.
That's true.
Our workers are in desperate straits right now in this country because unions have lost a lot of their power, and that is directly attributable to Ronald Reagan.
There's no question about that. It's
the deregulation of the industries and what the corporations are doing to America.
Yep.
It's a disgrace.
Well, let's go over some of those, because there's a lot of points you make.
He did not bring down the Soviet Union. Whoever was president at that time was going to be a recipient of that. I don't think there's one man who brought them down. I think the system brought itself down. But if there is one man in this world that I would give the credit to, it's John Paul II, and I'd put Lech Walesa right behind him. All that happened in Poland prior to Ronald Reagan being president. And if the Soviet system was going to be strong and continue, they would not have let what happened in Poland happen, because that's what led to the East Bloc coming down. And Poland, with Lech Walesa and the labor union situation there, which, by the way, see, it was the labor unions that brought down communism, that happened before Ronald Reagan was elected.
Well, Kevin, you do. You make a lot of good points. One of the things I think that's clear is the Soviet Union was falling apart internally.
Whoever was president had nothing to do with it. All he did was end up putting us in bankruptcy, and then Clinton started getting us out of it, and now we're back in it worse than ever.
That, I think, is his greatest legacy, is the deficits. In fact, what's interesting to me is, as I said earlier in the broadcast, is that the Republicans used to be the parties that cared about deficits, and they made a really big deal when Carter ran $40 and $50 billion deficit. And then Reagan took us to heights we'd never seen before, $200-something billion.
Hey, George W. Bush makes him look like a penny pincher.
That's exactly right. And then George Bush actually beat those records and taking us to $300, $400, $500 billion. And they really changed the party, because what's interesting is that the Reagan rhetoric continues, and so does the Reagan reality, right? I mean, the rhetoric was cut taxes, cut government. But we find that what that means is you cut taxes and you don't cut spending, and so that means that our children, our future generations, have to pay for all of that back. One difference, though, between Reagan and Bush, and you got to give Reagan credit over Bush, is that in 1986, Reagan did realize he had to raise taxes. He did realize he couldn't go as far as George Bush claims to go, and he actually did raise taxes back and lowered somewhat those enormous deficits he had. George Bush hasn't realized that yet.
There's another difference which I think is bigger. George Bush will never realize that. And part of it has to do with this. Ronald Reagan, politically, I think was a disgrace. His programs are still destroying this country. But he actually was a decent human being.
Yeah.
And he had friends that were Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, George Bush, he has Republicans that aren't his friends.
Yeah. No,
I'd like to see him and John McCain in a party together.
Yeah, no, that's another good point, in that Ronald Reagan could work with the Democrats. Now, hey, part of it's because he had to. I mean, Ronald Reagan had a Democratic Congress.
It wasn't just that, Mark. It was when it was a social, he was friends.
That's
him
true.
And Tip O'Neill, my understanding, were best of friends.
I don't know about best of friends. Tip O'Neill certainly hated Ronald Reagan's policies, but they could be cordial to each other.
My understanding is that they were very, very good friends personally.
Well, they could be cordial to each other. They didn't have this meanness. Reagan never had this meanness that we see from George W. Bush.
Meanness, by the way, started with Newt Gingrich in 94.
I think you're right. It started with the Republican Revolution. I think you're absolutely right. I think the other thing, though, that you pointed out about deregulation is important to remember, too, because a lot of people, again, in all this praise of Ronald Reagan, forget the SNL scandal, the savings and loans crisis. While Ronald Reagan was big on cutting welfare and cutting aid to poor people, and by the way, it's not just welfare. It's things like legal aid. It's things like Mike mentioned, the homeless schizophrenics. You know, before Ronald Reagan, homeless people were not on the street. I mean, people forget that in the 1970s, you could walk through the major American cities and not step over homeless people because they were in mental institutions. They were in, shelters. And Ronald Reagan closed all those down. And when you see a homeless person today, you can remember that that's also part of the Reagan legacy.
There's one more thing that's part of the Reagan legacy. And the last thing I'd like to talk about with it. I mean, there's so much negative. I could go on for days about Ronald Reagan. But the biggest thing is we're fighting a war right now. Basically, it's his war.
Well,
he completely disregarded anything that Saddam Hussein was doing because we were anti-Iran.
He did more than disregard. He supported Saddam Hussein.
We even traded to get guns from them in order to give them to the Contras. But he gave Saddam all the chemicals he wanted, and that was the reason, purportedly, that we went in there a year ago.
That's exactly right. And think of the irony of all of that. That here it is that it goes way back. We aided the Shah of Iran, the United States policy did, before Ronald Reagan. We aided a dictator who tortured his own people, but we did that to help American policy. Then you have the Iranian Revolution. You have the hostages taken and Ronald Reagan saying he's being tough on Iran, freeing the hostages. And to be tough on Iran, he's helping another vicious dictator, Saddam Hussein. And, you know, Saddam Hussein got his chemical weapons from the United States as well as France and Russia. And Don Rumsfeld, people forget, Don Rumsfeld went there, shook his hand, you know, praised Saddam Hussein. We were really helping Iraq to fight Iran.
You know what's really funny about it, too? At the same time this was going on,
yep,
Ali North flew into Tehran, brought the Ayatollah a cake in order to trade to get those guns to send them down to the Contras in Nicaragua.
Right. That's right.
At the same time, he's giving Saddam chemicals to go and gas the Iranians.
Well, the real irony at the end of the day is really when you think about it today, because it's important to understand not just the history, but how it affects us today, is that today, the thing you most hear from conservatives after, the weapons of mass destruction, they don't have that, and after, you know, Iraqi democracy, which is also going nowhere, is what they talk about is that, why do we have to take out Saddam Hussein? We took him out because he killed massive numbers of Kurds. He killed thousands of Kurds. When did this happen, folks? It happened while Ronald Reagan was president, and we were giving him chemical weapons. So Ronald Reagan apparently didn't care enough about the Kurds to stop it. So every time a conservative says we had to go into Iraq to save the Kurds or to stop him from gassing his own people, they need to say gassing his own people with the support of Ronald Reagan. But they're not going to say that.
No.
I don't think.
There's one other thing to mention while you're bringing that up. The last time Saddam went after his own people, he went after the Shias in South Iraq after the Gulf War,
right,
because George Bush urged them to revolt and we would come to their aid.
Right.
And we stood there on the border watching them getting slaughtered.
Right, that's all true. And the ultimate irony at the end of the day is that we supported Iraq as a counterweight to Iran. That's why we supported it. Then Iraq got, it's tried to kill George Bush's dad and so forth. So we went out after Iraq. And now, who do we install in the power in Iraq? Ahmed Chalabi, who's an agent of Iran. So we spend billions of dollars propping up Iran in the 70s. We spend billions of dollars propping up Iraq in the 80s. We spend billions of dollars and 1,000 American lives and 6,000 wounded taking down Iraq, only to again install Iran's theology. It's an amazing amount of money spent on both sides. I mean, it's maybe if we didn't spend any money on it at all, we'd have a lot more money at home, and Iran and Iraq would still be fighting each other, and that would be fine. I had no great praise for either Saddam Hussein or Khomeini's regime.
Yeah, and when you, and you brought up Chalabi there with the Iranians. At the same time, there's reports that the information that Chalabi was feeding to the Pentagon and the CIA was the information that Iran was giving to him to feed.
Exactly, exactly. He was an agent of Iran. So we fight Saddam Hussein in order to stop Iran, and instead we install Iran's guy to control Iraq. Thank you, George W. Bush, for bringing us about full circle.
Yeah, well, this is the Reagan legacy.
Well, it is. And, you know, part of the thing about the Reagan legacy is that he failed to distinguish between communism, where it was Soviet communism, which really was, you know, an awful thing, and I think Reagan got that right, and communism that was really national liberation movements, whether we're talking, you know, in Nicaragua or South Africa, for that matter. There was a little bit of communist support for the anti-apartheid movement, so suddenly he can't support the anti-apartheid movement. And meanwhile, he's supporting dictators. I mean, Saudi Arabian dictatorship, this wasn't started under the Bush administration.
No.
This was started under Ronald Reagan. I remember, Ronald Reagan wanted to sell AWACS, our very highest planes, our best spy planes, to Saudi Arabia. He didn't care about dictatorship and democracy. It was, for him, it was all anti-communism. So this same anti-communism that I think was very good in helping, and there's no question Lech Walesa and did a tremendous job in Poland, but I also think, and I'm going to give him a little bit of credit, that his rhetoric helped inspire people. I mean, Gorbachev, tear down this wall, was a masterful thing to say. But where it inspired people in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union, it really harmed a lot of lives in Latin America and Africa and the Middle East. And that's his mixed legacy. The other, of course, legacy is that Ronald Reagan was the first to give in to terrorism. I mean, that, after all, is what Arms for Hostages was about in Iran-Contra. He gave in. Terrorists took hostages. And Ronald Reagan, this strong man, win one for the Gipper, actually gave arms to get the hostages released. And that's a legacy that, again, people aren't going to talk about too much, but it's very important. And then, of course, his administration, Lawrence Walsh, by the way, said he was the prosecutor for Iran-Contra. He actually came to the conclusion that Ronald Reagan was involved in a cover-up. He couldn't prove that Ronald Reagan knew that money was transferred from arms to go to the Contras, but he did say, as part of his conclusion, that Ronald Reagan was involved in the cover-up. But the point is that you know, then, of course, he broke the law. And one of the things I think that also people should remember is, with all the talk about the positive, you know, how positive he had, 60% positive rating when he left office, and that's true, Clinton had a 66% positive rating when he left office. So the most popular president post-World War II in American history actually is Bill Clinton, with Ronald Reagan being second. But, hey, thanks very much for your call. I appreciate all the points you made.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. What do you think is the legacy of Ronald Reagan? Back with more right after this.
Americans are properly appalled and nauseated by photos of the torture and humiliation of Iraqi prisoners by U.S. military guards in the Abu Ghraib prison. But this is hardly America's first dance with the vicious devil of prison torture, something our own officials have long tolerated and condoned here at home. It has received scant media attention, but the name of old Lance McCotter recently popped up in conjunction with Abu Ghraib. McCotter is a career prison official, having run military prisons, headed up state prison systems in both Texas and Utah, and now serving as a top executive for a corporation that runs private prisons in New Mexico and elsewhere. The Houston Chronicle recently revealed that McCotter was chosen by Attorney General John Ashcroft to go to Iraq last year to oversee the reopening of Abu Ghraib, which had been Saddam Hussein's notorious torture prison, for use as the main U.S. military prison. McCotter was a curious choice, for everywhere he has gone, the word controversial has been applied to his tenure. In Texas, he lasted only 18 months as commandant, a time in which prison violence made frequent headlines and a federal judge threatened to fine the system $1,000 a day for abuses of prisoners' rights. In Utah, McCotter was forced to resign after a mentally ill inmate was stripped naked and strapped to a chair for 16 hours. The inmate collapsed and died, a death McCotter's administration tried to cover up as a suicide. The state ACLU says that McCotter had a horrifying record on human rights. Ironically, only 3 months before Ashcroft sent McCotter to Iraq, Ashcroft's own Justice Department had issued a damning report on inhumane conditions in the New Mexico prison run by McCotter's corporation. This is Jim Hightower saying, of all the capable prison officials who exist in our land, what kind of message did it send to have put this guy in charge? Ashcroft should be asked, why McCotter?
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Hello from Athens, Greece. Leave it to Econo Lodge and Roadway Inn Hotels to create the Wake Up a Winner sweepstakes. Go to choicehotels.com to learn how to enter, and you can win a trip to the big events in Athens. To book, call 800-4-CHOICE or go to choicehotels.com. Choice Hotels. We'll see you there.
No purchase necessary. Open to legal U.S. residents 18 and older. Void where prohibited. Promotion runs June 7th through August 29th, 2004. For official rules and how to enter without purchase, visit choicehotels.com.
We're back here on Mark Levine's Inside Scoop, bringing you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. And today we're talking about the mixed legacy of Ronald Reagan. There's a lot of lionizing, a lot of praise going on in the press. He was an optimistic person, but he also did a lot of negative things in domestic policy and foreign policy. And we're talking about the full legacy of the man, the full legacy of Ronald Reagan. And if you want to call in and join in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or you can send an email to comment at radioinsidescoop.com. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine. What's your comment on Ronald Reagan?
Yes, this is Pontiac from Michigan. I think his greatest legacy, Ronald Reagan, was that he broke the curse of Tecumseh.
The curse that says that if you're elected in a presidential year ending in zero, you're going to die in office.
Right, and he was the first president to do that.
To not die in office, being elected in zero.
Yeah, well, it came close, but he willed himself through it, and he survived. And I think that goes back to William Henry Harrison, for whom the curse was directed.
That is true.
So George W. Bush could have rested easy either way because he wasn't elected.
That's
so
true. I'd fear for Al Gore's safety if the curse hadn't been broken.
That's right. Al Gore, Ronald Reagan saved Al Gore's life.
That's one way of looking at it, certainly.
I think that's probably Ronald Reagan's biggest legacy is that he saved Al Gore's life.
Okay.
And Al Gore should...
Well, thank you for your call. That's an interesting way to put it. If you want to call in, the number is 877-57-SCOOP. I want to read. I've gotten a lot of email, and I want to read a lot of it. I got an email from Skip in Arizona. Skip says, Mark, I still remember Walter Cronkite's comment right after the invasion of Grenada and its termination of media coverage, meaning that Ronald Reagan did not allow the media to cover our war in Grenada. Cronkite said, according to Skip, he says, I'm paraphrasing fairly closely, we no longer have a democracy. Skip also remembers when Ronald Reagan gutted the great educational system in California when he was governor. As far as Reagan ending the Cold War, wasn't the USSR military budget being cut back during that time? If it was, the usual reason that the Soviets collapsed due to Reagan's huge expansion of the military budget doesn't make sense. Didn't they collapse for mostly other reasons? The Russians I talked to blame Gorbachev. Also, please be sure to mention his gutting of the fairness doctrine. I think of Reagan as an articulate W with a little more smarts. Well, you make a lot of good points, Skip. You're absolutely right about him not allowing media coverage in Grenada. In fact, I remember hearing later from one of my inside sources that Ronald Reagan invaded Grenada first and then found the legal justification for it later. He actually contacted law professors across the country and said, after he invaded Grenada, quick, give me 48 hours to justify it. And they did. They came up with this obscure Eastern Caribbean Nations Treaty to post-invasion justify the invasion. And that's also part of his legacy, something I think that's not very well known. As for the USSR, I think it's true. The USSR was collapsing of its own weight. I do want to say that I think what Reagan understood and what Bush doesn't understand is that containment works. That we had one of the reasons why we did win the Cold War without firing a shot is because we didn't fire a shot. We did not go to war. We did not see that the Soviet Union was collapsing and then go in and invade at its borders. What we did is we used containment. We used pressure, military pressure, including what Ronald Reagan used, and just the pressure of the economy, and their own system collapsed of its own weight. And that's, interestingly, the same thing I think that could have worked with Saddam Hussein. Its government was also collapsing. Its army was a third the size of what it was in the Persian Gulf War, and it was collapsing internally. Sanctions were working. There were some exceptions. The UN Food for Oil program wasn't working, but most sanctions were working. And Saddam was clearly contained. He was not a threat to his neighbors. In fact, much less of a threat than the Soviet Union. And so I think one of the legacies of Ronald Reagan that George W. Bush is not learning is that containment actually works. If you have a threat, you can actually keep it at its source. You don't have to invade. Invasion should be a last resort. And in fact, I think the Soviet Union did collapse under its own weight, but partly because we helped contain it. Skip also mentioned the gutting of the Fairness Doctrine. That's another good point. There used to be a doctrine that said that if you're on the radio and you say a point of view for one side, particularly to support one candidate for election, you had to show the other side. Reagan gutted that, and that's, I think, largely why today we have more than 90% of talk radio that's right-wing and very few progressive radio stations like this one. So thank you, Skip, for pointing all of that out. I want to read an email from Robbie in Dallas, Texas. Robbie writes, "I think that all in all, Reagan had good intentions, aspirations, and attitude, and those qualities created some good things. But to put him up on such a high pedestal like people are doing, I think is excessive. Yes, I think he helped end the Cold War, but what about his Star Wars project? He had one of the largest tax cuts in history, but a year later, when he saw that he was in trouble, he had to have one of the largest tax increases to compensate. I just want everyone to be sure they are properly differentiating between the emotions of a famous man dying and the factual things that he did while alive." Also, good points, Robbie. The Star Wars project, of course, was vintage Ronald Reagan. I think Ronald Reagan, again, his good and his bad were both related to his unrealistic dreams. He had these dreams beyond where people would go. He actually thought the Soviet Union could go down, and it did. But he also thought all kinds of things. He thought we could end nuclear weapons on Earth. I remember at the Reykjavik conference in Iceland, he actually proposed to Gorbachev to get rid of all of our nuclear weapons, and the Soviet Union would get rid of all of their nuclear weapons. And Gorbachev called his bluff. He said, okay, let's do it. And then his advisors rushed in to say, no, Ronald Reagan didn't really mean that. He actually felt that without government assistance, that rich people would help poor people. And clearly, that's not the case. That we don't need to regulate banks because they'll just do good. They'll be good people. And, of course, that didn't happen either. We had the massive savings and loans crisis. And he also believed in this strange economics. And I think Ronald Reagan really believed this, that you could cut taxes, increase spending on defense, and actually balance the budget. Now, when he first came up with this idea, which George Bush Sr. called voodoo economics, because it's ridiculous to think that you have less money coming in the government and more going out, and suddenly you're going to balance it. Of course it's ridiculous. Reagan launched on to an obscure economic theory, promoted by an obscure economist by the name of Arthur Laffer, that no other economist agreed with at all. And he promoted the Laffer curve. And the Laffer curve was this idea that if you cut tax rates, you'll actually increase the amount of taxes raised. And, you know, maybe that might happen if you cut the tax rate from 98% to 96%. And Reagan cut from 70 to 50%. But clearly, it had no relevance in Reagan's day. The budget deficit went way up. It has even less of a working theory in George Bush's day, you know, where the rich think that 39% is too much taxes to pay. Remember, Ronald Reagan felt that 50% was okay. So he had this tremendous belief that what he was doing was right, and that was true whether it was a realistic belief or not. And sometimes it was realistic, and sometimes it just ended up harming the economy. And that's also one of Ronald Reagan's legacies. Got another email from Renee, said, wasn't it Ronald Reagan president when Social Security benefits began to be taxed? Yes, that is true, Renee. And then I have a comment here by Ron in New York City. He writes, the corporate media has been lovingly hammering the airwaves with Ronald Reagan's epithet. What I would be curious to hear is your opinion if Reagan's passing lends George W. gravitas through party affiliation or marginalization through comparison? I think that's a great question, and I think that history's still out on that. I think George W. is very much trying to get the gravitas of Ronald Reagan. He's, you know, his website, his reelection website is all about Ronald Reagan now, and he's very much, but you know, Bush is too arrogant to actually even grab onto that legacy. It's amazing to me the comment he made in France where he said, you know, when he was asked, are you a Ronald Reagan Republican? And he said, no, I'm a George W. Bush Republican. Now, here was an easy, talk about a softball question. Here was an easy chance for Bush to say, yes, I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican. After all, Reagan got Democrats, he got, you know, some, you know, almost 60% of the nation supported him at one point. It was an easy chance to get his legacy, and Bush didn't bite. He didn't bite the easy question. He was so arrogant that he actually rejected Reagan. So I think through comparison, there's also some marginalization. I think that if we, and that's why it's important, I think, that we not just condemn Reagan, because we have to convince the middle. We have to look at those middle American voters, those Reagan Democrats. We have to bring them back to the party. We have to show to them, not just the good liberal Democrats who are going to vote for John Kerry, but also show the Reagan Democrats that John Kerry has more of a home for them than George Bush. That Ronald Reagan, you know, was more compassionate than George Bush. That even Ronald Reagan, for all his lack of compassion, George Bush is even less compassionate. He has even less of his compassionate conservatism. It's nothing. And so I think we do have to look and use the successes of Ronald Reagan, like, you know, the Soviet Union coming down, and a lot of that may have been luck, but to point out that containment, for example, does work. And I think with Bush, we've learned that he can't handle containment, certainly not with Iraq. Just to read on what Rod says, he says, John Stewart made the joke that because of W's bungling, he was nostalgic for Clinton, even Reagan. And then to drive the point home, he admitted nostalgia for Howard Taft. As to Reagan single-handedly bringing down the USSR, how do you support that when the truth is, during the height of the Cold War, the U.S. gave huge grants to the Soviet Union? If I have to praise Reagan, I'd have to say that I at least didn't wish Alzheimer's disease on him. And finally, Mary in Bellevue, she said, just tune in. I remember Reagan ridiculing, in that nice way he did, Carter about the trillion-dollar debt and the long line of dollar bills stretching to the moon. Good point, Mary. I'd forgotten about that metaphor. And he left with a near $3 trillion debt. Mary says, I agree with the caller that George Bush and the then smaller but very lethal shadow government were calling the shots. Had Reagan not been so popular with the people, my strident guess is he would not have had two terms. I do find it interesting that Neil, or one of the Bush boys, was dining with a Hinckley brother the day before the assassination attempt. I hadn't heard that. Though I had heard that Reagan officials had contacted the Iranians holding American hostages and asked them not to release the hostages until after Carter lost the election. I don't think it's a coincidence it was done on election day, on Inauguration Day. Reagan supporters will say that was done because he threatened the Iranians. I don't know about that. But there's at least that possible conspiracy theory that's out there. And so I guess at the end of the day, I have to say that Ronald Reagan's legacy is mixed. He shouldn't be just uniformly praised as he is. We have to remember the darker side. He was an optimistic guy, and Kerry praised his communication skills. But he took America in a way where the middle class started blaming the poor. He had a very aggressive foreign policy in places like Nicaragua, Grenada, really all over the world. He was seeing communism under every rock. And he took us in that direction, too. One of the things I didn't appreciate, in fact, was when he went to Bitburg and actually praised the SS men who were at the German cemetery. So he had this larger-than-life idea as an actor, I think he truly did believe that America could be its best in this shining city on a hill. I think he really did believe in that. But he's also the guy that brought the Christian conservatives, the fundamentalists, that brought all these issues, abortions, into the mainstream. Did not certainly care about gay rights, did not mention AIDS any time during his administration. So he brought a lot of the negative, the Christian coalition that still haunts us to this day. And I think it's important to remember the good, the bad, and the ugly under Ronald Reagan. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow where we have our Election Tuesday and we talk about Bush ads and how, well, they're not that truthful. Tune in tomorrow here on the Inside Scoop. This is Mark Levine signing off.